Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Flynn Berry, whose new novel, A Double Life, is now available everywhere from the good folks at Viking. In this book, we meet Claire, a London doctor with friends, a dog that she takes for walks, she's got a nice apartment, and just a nice, simple, tidy life. But Claire was born under a different name in a different city in England, and the story takes us between the past and the present, telling the tale of her father who is wanted for a decades-old murder. Flynn, this plot is so well developed. What exactly is it that Claire's father is suspected of having done back when Claire was just 8 years old?
So he is suspected of having murdered her nanny and attacked his wife. And the case is loosely inspired by a true story that occurred in 1974. In the UK, and the circumstances of the crime are kind of mirrored in the book.
Well, this book takes us deep inside Claire's mind, and when you pull back the curtain, what is driving her desire to find her father?
So I think it's a few things. It's first a desire for understanding where she came from and who her parents actually were. I was really haunted by the idea of growing up not knowing if your father was a monster or if he had been accused wrongfully and how that would affect your daily life. So it's partly just a desire to understand, and then it's also a desire for justice. And I think it's less about revenge than just sort of acknowledging the truth.
What part of her desire is driven by the thought that her dad might be innocent?
I think a lot. I think it's really normal for children of people who have been accused of terrible things to try to justify it. So while researching the book, I read a lot about the children of war criminals or Joseph Stalin's daughter and how she tried to cope with her father's legacy and how it kind of haunted her throughout her adult life.
Well, we see this a lot of times with kids whose parents have either taken off for just don't want to deal with the situation, or they're in prison or with a new family, those types of things. We don't see a whole lot of that seeping into Claire, a lot of this despising of her father. Do you think she's already dealt with that part of her life?
Yeah, I think that came earlier as a teenager, and as an adult, I think she mostly just wants what we don't want, which is a kind of calm, orderly, balanced life. So she wants to be able to go to work and be a good doctor, and she wants to be her friends and go on dates and not have this kind of parallel secret life running alongside it.
You talked about the motivating event behind this book was a real-life murder from 1974. What happened in that case?
The Lord Lucan case is one of those sort of mesmerizing, haunting cases that has gripped the UK for over 40 years. It's sort of like the Lindbergh trial here, in that people haven't let go of it, or even Jack the Ripper, something where people are still trying to find answers. And Lord Lucan was this handsome, charismatic aristocrat, and he lived in a beautiful, exclusive part of London. And he went missing on the night that his children's nanny was attacked and his wife was his children's nanny was murdered and his wife was attacked, and he hasn't been seen ever since. And there are lots of theories about where he might be. He would be 83 now, if he's still alive, and whether or not he was involved in the crime.
When we hear the term Lord or Earl, like Claire's dad was in this book, and same with Lord Lucan, what is there anything comparable in American society class for a Lord or an Earl?
Well, it's so interesting. I think it would be someone like the Kennedy, someone like a member of the Kennedy family, where they seem to be sort of granted respect and deference and curiosity automatically from birth. But it's interesting. I think the U.S., one of our main differences is that we don't have an aristocracy. Lord Lucan inherited a place in the House of Lords, which is a government position, which is kind of insane for an American to even think about, that you could just have that from birth.
Well, Claire's mother was outranked in class by her husband, and how did those class divisions manifest themselves between husbands and wives, not just in fiction, but even in British society?
So there's kind of a terrible suspicion of someone being manipulative, I think, if they marry someone from what's considered a class above theirs. And their motives are called into question, and there's lots of kind of speculation, which I think we see in America as well, but maybe on a lesser scale. And then in the true case that the client, that the novel is based on, his wife was the victim of a huge amount of kind of scorn and suspicion, and part of that was because she was considered kind of an interloper. Like, she had married into a class above her own and wasn't maybe deserving of having been with her husband in the first place.
Would that be something American society calls gold digger?
Exactly.
Okay.
So I guess we do have that. It's funny how it's always women, isn't it? I don't know if there are many famous men who are accused of that.
I've never heard of it, as now that you mention it, being called against a man, but I guess there's a first time for everything. I'm willing to try it. But anyway, Claire harbors some guilt about her father's suspected crimes. It's certainly not legal culpability, but rather emotional culpability. Where does that feeling come from?
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, that it's almost the legal aspect matters less than the emotional aspect. And I think it's one of those things that, as children, you look at your parents' marriage and you wonder sort of how they got from point A to point B and whether or not they're treating each other well and how that kind of affects, you know, the dynamics of a family. So it is very much a question of emotional culpability. Even if he didn't commit the crime, was he still a good man? So he went missing. So even if he's innocent, there's still a level of kind of hurt, I think, and a desire to understand better.
There's an old adage that truth is stranger than fiction, and when you fictionalize an account of a real crime, how do you decide what details to fictionalize when some of them seem as if they would stretch the limits of even a fiction reader's imagination?
Yeah, that's such a good question, and I love being asked it because there is so much in this case that is just completely bizarre and that I had to leave out because it just seemed like a reader would doubt it, or it would draw too much attention away from the rest of the story. So one of those is, there's a fairly common theory, which the police investigated, that in real life, Lord Deacon either killed himself or was killed by one of his friends and fed to his friend's pet tigers on his private estate. This is just insane to think about.
There's a scene in the book that deals with a coroner's inquest, and I found that very interesting because that idea is so foreign to a lot of Americans who are probably, well, just readers and a lot of Americans. What role do those inquests play in England nowadays?
Yeah, I find those really fascinating as well. So a coroner's inquest is considered separate from the judicial system, and the coroner's job is to determine the cause of death. And if the cause of death wasn't natural, then the verdict can be murder. So in a way, it's having the coroner play the role of a judge almost, and hearing from different witnesses, and hearing from pathologists, and coming to a conclusion. And Lord Lucan actually is the last person at which a coroner's inquest was able to return a verdict. So the coroner's inquest in his case said that the woman had died and that he was the murderer. And after that case, they decided to take that power away from the coroners and keep it only in the court.
And I assume there's no rules on, you know, rules of evidence, hearsay, anything goes in those hearings, right?
Sort of. It's, and I'm not sure if you have the same sort of risks that you do giving with witness testimony. I know that you're not allowed to ask questions to discredit a witness. So you can't bring up lies that someone has told in the past or sort of discredit their character the way that you would in a trial, just kind of call into question whether or not the witness can be trusted. So it's supposed to be more kind of exploratory and like evidence there in good faith.
All right. Well, this novel just kept me so interested, and I read it in a night. It's called A Double Life. It's by Flynn Berry, and the book is available now wherever your fine books are sold from the good folks at Viking. Just an exciting read, and the end will have you scratching your head and probably in shock. So, Flynn, excellent work here, and thanks for joining us to talk about it.
Well, thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time. It was then I felt the stranger.